Wednesday, September 16th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you get anywhere else. I realize there are a million sports shows out there. There are a million sports podcasts out there for you to listen to. But understand, the Daily Dose brings you some insight that you just don't get anywhere else. We're going to bring you a common sense approach to sports that you are going to like. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can get it pretty much anywhere where podcasts are hosted. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Twitter. You'll see that I will, I'll live cast some of the games. I'll do some live tweeting on some of the big games or some of the big events, stuff like that. You can find me at Twitter. Daily Dose Sports is the Twitter handle. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. You can also find me on Facebook if you want to liven up that Facebook feed and not just have to see, your great aunt and her three kids that you've never met. Daily Dose Sports, you can add me and like the page on Facebook, give you some links to some articles, give you some links to the podcast, a few different things. If you want to just go over to our website, want to check out some of the articles that we post on the website, post new things every single week, whether it is a power ranking of the NFL teams, whether it is a top five of college football teams, whether it's just some of my opinions and some of the things that are out there, some opinions on the world of sports, you can check it out, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. And if you would like to email the show, we have had some emails. We get some really, really good emails. Like I've told you before, the great thing about hosting a show like this is that I have really, really intelligent listeners that are a little bit smarter than just the rah-rah morons. If you would like to email the show, got a question, got a concern, need some advice, you never know, what kind of email we might get, hit the show up, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. This week, we jump into the NFL and college football. It is great to have football back. Wasn't it nice this last week, just having football back on Saturday, knowing we've got a full slate of college football games. And then on Sunday, we've got a full slate of pro football games to watch. And even on Monday night. Hey, you know, there was talk. I'm hearing talk. Did you see, they had the two games on Monday night. So you had the one game starting at like 5 o'clock, and then you had the next game starting at 8 o'clock. There is some talk. Maybe the NFL would look start doing that every single week. Because you figure you're going to own, the regional broadcast in those areas. You're gonna get viewers. You're gonna get a ton of viewers. It was nice to have football back this week. We're gonna jump in and discuss that. As usual, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5, a very popular segment. If I get comments on anything, it is always on the Daily Dose Top 5. Got one for you today that I think you might find rather interesting. You don't want to miss that. A few things coming out in the world of sports that are at least of interest. Did you see Marshawn Lynch's mom, Delisa Lynch? She thinks Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator Darrell Bevell should probably be fired. And she took to social media to say that, she thinks he should have been fired after the Super Bowl loss. She posted this, I guess, on Facebook. She called Marshawn Lynch's offensive coordinator the worst play caller ever and suggested that on Sunday in the loss to the Rams, he gave the ball to Marshawn Lynch just to make up for that interception in the Super Bowl. I've got news for you. Beating the Rams isn't going to make up for losing the Super Bowl. Nothing like having mom step in for you, is there? And I know, I interviewed you guys, you might have heard, last year before the Super Bowl, I interviewed Marshawn Lynch. Not the most talkative guy, not the most open guy. He's a little tough. We reached him. I'm not going to lie. The Daily Dose reached him. We got to him and he opened up a little more to us than he does to most of the media. But nothing like having mom step up for you and start to, throw some weight around saying who should be fired, telling you, sometimes parents and usually adults, can you just get out of the way? Can you just stop? You don't have to step up for your son. He's a big boy. He's, in fact, a huge boy. You certainly do not need to fight his battles for him. Jason Pierre-Paul, defensive end for the New York Giants, is trying to get past this idea that he is not able to play right now. And, they franchised him last year. And so he has money sitting there on the table. Now, one thing that the Giants can do, the Giants can pull that money back off the table. You'll remember that Jason Pierre-Paul was involved in that fireworks incident on 4th of July. And they brought him in last week and had a look at him, because the Giants haven't even seen exactly what's wrong. They know there was an incident, but they haven't even seen exactly what's wrong. We knew he lost the index finger. We knew that. Now, apparently, it seems he also lost a portion of the thumb, and the middle finger has had multiple surgeries done to it. Now, when you do surgeries like these, you kind of have to go from the inside. So you got to go inside and fix the bone, and then you start doing skin grafts over the top. And so he's got part of thumb, no index, and part of middle. Yeah, that's not going to affect you at all, playing right defensive end and going down on that right hand as you tip over on every single snap. No, that won't affect you at all. So the Giants, I think what the Giants might do, and there was a almost $15 million tender that they put out there on the table. What they may do is they may pull that back. Now, what that will do for Pierre Paul, next season, he would be an unrestricted free agent. He could go wherever he wants. He posted a video this week showing himself blocking a sled and pulling like a sled and doing some stuff, saying this, you know, this isn't going to do anything. This isn't going to affect my play in any way. Really? And the video doesn't even show the hand. Like, the video just shows like he's just got like a bandaged, you know, clump on the one hand. I'm not ponying up all that money for a guy that just has clumpy on the end of his arm. Sorry, I'm siding with the Giants. And I don't side with the Giants much on anything these days, because that is a circus show right now. And we saw what they did against the Cowboys this last week. But I kind of got to side with the Giants on this one. I have no idea what you're capable of. I don't know if you can play. Goodness, what a bizarre story. I can't believe I'm saying this, but somehow the Texas Rangers just pulled past the Houston Astros in the AL West and have taken the lead. And remember, you know, back when they went and got Cole Hamels, we kind of said, well, that'll be cute, and, you know, like next year or 2 years down the road. Somehow they have put some things together and they have the lead. I can't believe it. I won't lie to you. I'm still kind of rooting for Houston. I just think it's more of a fun story. But right now, Texas Rangers have the lead in the AL West. They would be going to the playoffs if the season were to end today. There are less than 20 games left. Playoff races are going to get down to it. We will talk some more baseball in the future. But let's be honest, it's football season. We're going to talk a lot more football. The Texas Longhorns have fired their athletic director, Steve Patterson, who apparently angered some fans, angered some boosters, just wasn't the warm, friendly type. He was real aggressive in the way that he talked to people. He was real aggressive in the way that he was, you know, kind of demanding money from boosters and fans and that kind of thing. People don't understand. And here's the one thing that you have to try to understand. These jobs that these guys have, these professional sports jobs that people have, they're not that different from what people do in like the corporate world. You've got to understand, yes, it's dealing with sports, and maybe you're a coach, maybe you're the head coach of a professional football team. It's not that different in a lot of ways from jobs in the corporate world. I've got to understand how to deal with people. I've got to understand how to work with people. I've got to understand how to get people to support us and want to go forward with this. If they can buy into the system and the things that I'm teaching, it's going to pay off for me in the long run. Steve Patterson had a really, really tough time doing that. He was kind of that jerk athletic director. That doesn't last very long. Eventually, people just burn out on you and say, well, I'm not doing this. I'm not working with this guy. I'm certainly not going to give you guys the money that you think you deserve if you're a jerk. Texas has now hired an interim athletic director, Mike Perrin, a Houston attorney who played some linebacker and defensive end for Texas back in the 60s. He's going to take over, and they say that they will start looking for a new athletic director here in the next year. That is a big-time job. And Patterson did a decent job in hiring people. I mean, he brought in Shaka Smart. I think Shaka is a pretty good basketball coach. He brought in Charlie Strong. That's taken a little while, but I think Strong is a good football coach. I just want to see if they're going to be patient. But he just seemed like he couldn't work well with people. It's not always just the hires you make. Sometimes it's just the day-to-day activity in some of these jobs. Let's jump in, because we've got a lot of things to get to. Let's jump into the NFL. You know, it's funny. When you look at the NFL, when you look at just sports in general, because as a society, we tend to overreact to sports. I mean, we see one game and we really start to jump on things and really start to think back. Remember the NBA Finals? The Golden State Warriors beat the Cavaliers in Game 1, and we're like, oh, we got to figure it out. We got to figure it out. Golden State is going to roll in this series. This series is over. And then the Cavaliers won Game 2 and Game 3. We got it figured out. Cavaliers are going to roll in this series. We know how this is going to go now. Yeah, no, not really. Golden State won the next three and it was over. In football, it's even worse. Because there are so many fewer games. We have a game each week, so we have the whole week to digest it. We have the whole week to kind of make these grand proclamations. We're going to say, well, here's what we know. And we know this, and we know this, and we can see this. We really think we have a lot of things figured out. And we watch week one, and we completely overreact, and we start thinking, okay, I understand now. I know how this season is going to go. I know how this team is going to be. I want you to think back to last year. Think back to last year. In like the week two or something, the Seahawks lost to the Chargers. Everybody say, man, that's a terrible loss. Shouldn't lose to the Chargers. The Patriots, remember, in September, the Patriots were 2-2. And do you remember that the New England Patriots went into Kansas City last year and the Chiefs smashed them 41-14? And people were saying, hey, Tom Brady might be done. He might be done. They might need to bring in the Garoppolo kid because Brady looks like he's finished. That offensive line cannot protect him. Tom Brady looks like he's done. I mean, he doesn't look like he has it anymore. No one remembers September when we get to December. When we get to playoff time, when we get to crunch time in the NFL, we kind of forget September. A lot of overreactions in the sports world. A lot of overreactions. You're hearing things right now. You're hearing on the major networks. Here's what we know. Here are the things we've learned so far in week one. I got news for you. You haven't learned much of anything in week one. We don't know anything yet in week one. Let's look at a couple of the overreactions that we got in week one. Because we had a bunch of them. The New England Patriots beat the Steelers 28-21 on Thursday night. Doesn't that seem like a long time ago? Man, that seems like forever ago. Seems like last season. But the Patriots beat the Steelers on Thursday night. And you started to hear people saying things like, well, did you see how hot Brady was? Brady and the Patriots are just going to roll again. He threw four touchdowns. And at one point, Tom Brady had 19 completed passes in a row. Pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. Maybe they are going to roll again. Except for that the Steelers' offense was horrible. We knew it was going to be a transition. We knew when the Steelers, lost Dick LeBeau and they are going to go from the 3-4, they're going to switch over to a 4-3. We knew it was going to be a transition. We knew their defense was going to struggle. And let's be honest, they don't have a ton of talent, especially not secondary. But we didn't think it was going to be this bad. We didn't think it was going to be this bad. Maybe some of that was the Patriots were really, really good. And maybe some of it was the Steelers didn't know what they were doing. They had one player to find on offense. You just have to know where in the world is Rob Gronkowski. You have to cover him. I don't know if you have to cover anyone else on that team. They've got Edelman. They've got some people getting back from injury. I have to know where Gronkowski is on every single play. There were plays they didn't cover him. Remember when Tom Brady sent out those emails to whoever his buddy was or whatever, and he was kind of giving the Broncos a hard time, and he said, man, can you believe they tried to cover Rob Gronkowski with Von Miller? How dumb was that? Well, the Steelers one-upped it because they tried to cover Gronkowski with no one. They were just like, oh, yeah, I don't know. Who's got him? Never mind. We'll figure it out later. Now, Gronkowski might be the most valuable player on that team. And the Steelers didn't even cover him on a few plays. Also, Patriots defense was not great. Do you realize, and I know the Steelers offense has at least a chance to be pretty good this year, but the Patriots allowed 464 yards to Pittsburgh. Doesn't sound that bad later this year, but right now, when the Steelers don't have Le'Veon Bell and they don't have Martavis Bryant, that's not good, Patriot fan. The fact that you gave up almost five Bills to a team that was out there without two of their probably top three or four players on offense? Steelers probably bizarrely outplayed the Patriots. They just couldn't make a field goal. If they make a couple field goals, Steelers might have won that game. With all the stuff, with all the, we're going to support Brady and the New England Patriots fans out in, you know, just totally crazy and bringing out the Super Bowl rings and all that stuff, they could have lost that game real, real easy if the Steelers kicker can just make a couple kicks. So for all the hype we heard about the Patriots, we'll see. We'll see. You know, the Jets, the New York Jets beat the Cleveland Browns 31-10. And I've started to hear talk, hey, you know, the Jets might be pretty good. Jets might be pretty good. They're pretty solid. You know, we knew their defense was good. And now with Geno Smith out, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's kind of that savvy veteran quarterback. And now he has some weapons to work with. You know, he's got Brandon Marshall. He's got Eric Decker. He's got Chris Ivory. He's got a few things to work with. Except for the fact that we already know who Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's a very average quarterback. And when things get tight, he kind of tends to, how do I say it, throw the ball to the wrong team. On Sunday, Fitzpatrick against the Browns defense was 15 for 24 for 179 yards. He had two touchdowns and an interception. And the Browns defense isn't very good. I've got news for you. Jets offense is still going to struggle this year. They might have got over on Sunday. Don't buy into quite the hype just yet. On Sunday, we saw the Buffalo Bills beat the Indianapolis Colts. We're already starting to hear some things. You know, the Colts are going to be terrible. The Bills look like they might be, you know, Super Bowl contenders. Quarterback Tyrod Taylor for the Bills is just a perfect fit for this offense. Maybe. I told you last week, I think the Bills have a good shot at being a playoff team. I really liked what I saw from Tyrod Taylor. I liked the way he carried himself. I liked the way he spoke before and after the game about, you know, it didn't seem like he got too high, didn't seem like he got too low, pretty even keeled. I liked the way he carried himself in the game. You know, here's what I want to see, though. I want to see if he can make some plays under pressure, because we know that the Colts defense isn't great. Now, we also know Andrew Luck's probably going to get it going. And to be fair, Buffalo's defense is phenomenal. Buffalo might have the best defense in the league. But I want to see if Tyrod Taylor can make plays when there's actually some pressure on him. Because it seemed like the later that game got, the not quite as good Tyrod Taylor looked. Didn't it kind of seem like they were starting to fall apart a little bit? Offense couldn't get it going late. Good thing the defense was making plays, because the offense kind of started to fall off. They were hot early, kind of went away. Here's the other thing I want to see from Tyrod Taylor, who I think going into the season we were looking at as maybe being a punt returner. I want to see if he has the sense to not take the big hit. This new generation of quarterbacks that we have, and I realize Taylor is not quite as young, but this new generation of spread quarterbacks, they have this mentality like, well, I'm a spread quarterback. I can be a threat in the run and in the pass. Here, I've got news for you. If you're not smart enough to get down, if you're not smart enough to avoid that hit, it's not a matter of if NFL defenses get to you, it's when. Because they're going to knock your head off when they get the chance. I want to see if Tyrod Taylor has that sense of time and score. It's the first quarter. It's second and six. I don't have to dive for some extra yards. I can just get down and we can play, you know, third and two and see how it comes out. Because if I dive for those extra yards and I get knocked out, Matt Castle's coming in. And I think we all know how the story ends if Matt Castle comes in. I want to keep an eye on Tyrod Taylor. I like what I saw from the Bills. I really like what I saw from the Bills. Let's see a little bit more of it. Let's see it against a better defense. They are going to be playing the Patriots this week. We're going to talk about that game in just 1 minute. St. Louis Rams beat the Seahawks 34-31 in overtime, and we are already starting to hear the Seahawks are in trouble. Marshawn Lynch's mom is asking for the firing of the offensive coordinator. With Cam Chancellor, you know, holding out, you know, the Seahawks defense allowed 350-plus yards on Sunday to a Rams team that, let's be honest, has always kind of struggled with that offense, with any offense. And now the Seahawks get to go to Green Bay. They could be 0-2. Real easy. But does 0-2 kill you? 0-3 might kill you. 0-4 probably does kill you. I don't think 0-2 kills you. And Cam Chancellor probably they'll probably figure something out and get him back. He's losing a lot of money. He's losing like $250,000 every weekend. Maybe. You know, one thing about Cam Chancellor, we haven't talked much about his holdout. He is 1 year into his 4-year extension, and he's asking for a new contract with a little more guaranteed money. I don't know if the Seahawks can redo that deal. No one put a gun to your head and made you sign your four-year, $28 million deal. If the Seahawks redo that deal, whose deal will they not redo? That deal is new. Who can you not redo if you're going to just, well, yeah, it's only been a year. Let's redo it. He wants more money. Let's give it to him. I don't know about that. I think the Seahawks will eventually get back. Do I think they can take a step back this year? Yes. Are they done? Not even close. The Tennessee Titans crushed the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 42-14, and Marcus Mariota. Now, you're going to think I'm joking. I heard analysts say this. Marcus Mariota has the release of Dan Marino and the poise of Joe Montana. Slow down. What are you going to say next? He has the face of an angel and the body of a Greek god. Stop it. Mariota was 13 for 16 for 209 yards. He had four touchdowns. He's going to be amazing, right? Maybe. But I saw Tampa's defense, and they didn't even look like they knew what side of the ball to line up on. They were horrible. Tampa was 25th. In yards per game allowed last year. They were 25th in scoring allowed last year. And somehow, it looks like they've gotten worse on defense. So you can get really, really hyped about Marcus Mariota. And I like the kid. I hope he does well. He's a guy, because of his work ethic, because of the way he carries himself, I'm kind of cheering for Marcus Mariota. Slow down. You beat Tampa. They at least have a chance to be one of the worst teams in the league. They have a shot. Don't get too high on Marcus Mariota just yet. He's going to have some growing pains. Trust me, it's coming. The Denver Broncos beat the Baltimore Ravens 19-13, and Peyton Manning looked horrible. We're already starting to hear he can't run Gary Kubiak's offense. You know, Kubiak came in with that West Coast offense. They're going to do the zone blocking scheme, the one cutback stuff, the short passing game, and this is a bad, bad fit for a guy like Peyton Manning. He can't run it. He has no arm strength. He should probably be benched for Brock Osweiler, the backup. He needs to retire. Wait a second. It's a completely new system. I will give you that. But it's also a totally rebuilt offensive line. Do you realize there is one starter that is returning from this offensive line from last season? One. Their right guard, Luis Vasquez, is the only returner. They have a rookie at left tackle protecting Peyton's blind side, and they have basically a rookie at center. He was on the practice squad last year in Matt Paradis. Don't forget, the Broncos did manage to beat a pretty good Baltimore Ravens team. We kind of forget all that. Well, yeah, they won, but they won ugly. Yeah, I bet the Ravens wish they had won ugly. Maybe Manning is done. Maybe he is. There are some aspects to his game that I look at and say he struggles to make these throws. But what I see a lot of is if you can give him a pocket and he can set his feet, he is a lower body thrower because he doesn't have the arm strength. He can still make the throws. But you have to give him a pocket. This offensive line has to get a lot better. It's too early to tell. Now, they play Thursday night against Kansas City. That might give us a little more idea, but it's way, way, way too early to tell if Peyton Manning is done yet. Couple games I want to get to that took place on Monday night. The Falcons beat the Eagles 26-24, and we have already started hearing that Chip Kelly is in trouble. He rebuilt this team, and now it's obvious it hasn't worked. Maybe Kelly's on the hot seat. Maybe Kelly is in trouble. After one game? The Eagles, they're not going to the playoffs after one game? Here's my question for those people that think Chip Kelly's already done. And maybe he is, I don't know. But what if the Eagles kicker actually makes that last field goal? Then we're all talking about maybe he is a genius. Maybe Chip Kelly's smarter than everyone else. And then we're talking about, well, the Falcons are garbage and they're just going to be terrible again. It's such a fine line between winning and losing. Just that one little kick. If they make that kick, we're all talking about Chip Kelly. Well, looks like it's all working. Looks like it's all coming up roses for Chip Kelly. It's a long season. It's a long, long season. Last game I want to discuss is the San Francisco 49ers beating the Vikings 20-3 late on Monday night. And now I've already heard San Francisco fans, people saying, hey, we were throwing dirt on the 49ers. They're going to be pretty good. But I saw Colin Kaepernick get lit up. And, you know, these young quarterbacks, like I talked about, they're not always the brightest at getting down, avoiding the big hits. here's what's coming for the Niners. Because I realize Carlos Hyde, their running back, looked great on Monday night. He was getting through. He looks like he's lost a little bit of weight. He looks a little bit quicker. He's pretty strong. But here's what's coming for the Niners. You're going to get some stacked defenses. You're going to get 8-9 guys in the box, and they're going to dare Colin Kaepernick to beat them with his arm. We've seen in the past that doesn't always work out that well for Kaepernick. A lot of times he's throwing balls all over the place. He's getting, you know, popped in the head. That doesn't always work out well for the Niners. It's coming. You got away with kind of playing a Vikings team that maybe had too high expectations in opening week. Maybe it was just right place, right time. The one thing that I thought was interesting on Monday night was that both the Eagles and the Vikings, the Eagles have DeMarco Murray. The Vikings, of course, got Adrian Peterson back. Neither one of them seemed like they went into the game with the idea of let's feed these running backs. We've got these just beast running backs. Let's feed them because they're going to get stronger. And when they hit about 15 carries, they're going to get better. And when they hit about 20 carries, they're going to get even better. And we're going to start breaking off. They kind of started to get away from game plans really quick. No, let's throw it around. Let's move the ball around. Let's spread it. No, I've got a big gun. I'm going to shoot the thing. And I didn't understand that on either one of those sides. Give those guys some carries. What'd they get? 10, 12 carries each? You've got to let a running back, especially those types of running back, you've got to let them get into a groove, get into a rhythm, start to read their offensive linemen. That's how they start putting together those big, big games. What did you think of the new uniforms? There are a few teams that rolled out some new uniforms this weekend. And I got to be honest, I wasn't a huge fan on a few of them. Cleveland Browns, you saw those uniforms. They had the, what are they? Syracuse? When I turned on that game, I thought the Jets were playing Syracuse. And I realized that the Browns and Syracuse are similar in talent, but really? You're going to wear the same uniforms? That's exactly what it looked like. And then the 49ers. The 49ers came out with the black. Now, I'm not a huge, red and gold, whatever their uniform, but it's like that classic look. Like, you don't take the Dodgers or the Yankees and put them in black just because that's kind of the cool. You don't do that. Like the Niners, that's a classic uniform. You don't mess with that. But somehow they were like, well, I don't know. It's not really going to match, but how about we just put black in there? Oh yeah, sounds like a great idea. Let's do that. I thought those were hideous. And no, I'm not hating on all of you. I'll tell you the uniform I did like. And I kind of liked those Buffalo Bills throwback helmets where they went with the white helmets. I thought those were a much better look than what I've seen from the Bills in the past. I like that old helmet. White helmets just look cool. I don't know what it is, but white football helmets just look cool. I thought it was just a clean look. And for two, it kind of reminded me of when the Bills used to actually, make the playoffs. This week, a few games to watch. I told you Thursday night, Denver Broncos go to Kansas City. I won't lie. I think this is a really, really tough game for the Denver Broncos. Chiefs are getting better. Broncos have won 4 AFC West division titles. I think the Chiefs are going to sit there and say, we've got to find a way to beat them at home. Broncos have got to run the ball much better than they did on Sunday. Couldn't run the ball. I think they finished the game with like 73 yards rushing. They have to run the ball better. On the other side, they have to stop the run with Kansas City. You know Kansas City's going to go with that ball control, try to feed it to Jamal Charles, try to go short pass like we've talked about in the past. Chiefs quarterback Alex Smith, He just doesn't always throw a lot of passes. They keep it very, very, low danger for him. And he's going to throw the short dink and dunk passes, and it's really boring, but it's really also really efficient. So it's going to be interesting. You know, here's something to think about with these Thursday night games, and we have a more full slate of Thursday night games this year. Since 2006, in the NFL Thursday night games, the home team wins about 60% of those games. And if you've noticed, they usually put the team that probably would not be favored, they put them at home, try to make it a little bit of a closer game. I don't know if it's, the fact that the home team doesn't have to travel, and so they get that extra, kind of that extra day of preparation, but the home team usually does win in this game. Keep an eye on that game Thursday night, should be entertaining. The New England Patriots go to Buffalo. I want to see the Patriots versus a good defense, because we saw them in week one against an atrocious defense, and I want to see can Tyrod Taylor, make some plays when he has to. The Bills always play the Patriots tough. It just seems like they always end up losing. Here is kind of the catch-22 with this game. I told you in the past, I'm sick to death of the Patriots. They can go away. I would be fine with that. But can you even imagine how obnoxious Rex Ryan will be if they somehow beat the Patriots? Like, he's not a loudmouth enough as it is. Can you imagine the level of obnoxiousness he would take it to if he beats the Patriots? Oh, can't even imagine. Another game to keep in mind, the San Diego Chargers go to the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, both these teams are 1-0. Both these teams, Chargers beat the Detroit Lions in just a bizarre back-and-forth game that saw, I believe Detroit was up at one point 21-6 or something, and the Chargers came back and won it. Cincinnati Bengals looked pretty solid in week one. I can't figure either one of these teams out. They're both flaky. I don't know if it's the flakiness from their quarterbacks. Both their quarterbacks are kind of goofy. I don't know. But Chargers at Cincy should be an entertaining game. Dallas Cowboys go to Philadelphia. And I'm telling you right now, Eagles fans, Sam Bradford is not going to stay healthy for long if he keeps getting hit like he did on Monday night. And the Falcons don't have a great defense. But that should be an interesting game. You know, the Cowboys are now going to be without Dez Bryant for a few weeks. He broke a couple bones in his foot. He's going to get a surgery to put a couple screws in his foot. What I want to see from Dallas, and we already started to see it a little bit in week one, are they going to go back to Jason Garrett saying, okay, Tony Romo, throw it all over the place and hopefully we'll win? Because if they get back to that nonsense, the Cowboys are going to struggle this year. And they'll struggle this week against Philadelphia. They need to run and run. And then when you think about throwing, run some more. Because they get themselves into trouble when you just try to put it all on Tony Romo. The New York Jets go to Indianapolis. And the reason that I'm interested a little bit in this game is the Jets have a great defense. I think they're going to struggle on offense. The Colts have a good offense. I think they're going to struggle on defense. Here's one thing to keep in mind. Playing at Indy, that loud stadium. Don't be surprised if Jets quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick throws a few clutch interceptions. That just seems to be, you know, his persona. Let's jump over to the world of college football. You know, like we did last week, let's talk a little bit about some of the winners and losers from this past week, week two. A few winners I want to talk about. First off, Michigan State. You know, head coach Mark D'Antonio has done a great job of building just a tough, efficient team in East Lansing. You know, the thing I like, and we talked about this in our college football preview, the thing that he's done is he's built a tough front on both the offensive and defensive lines. And you know, we always talk about how the games are won in the trenches, but then when it comes to the actual games, we kind of forget. We start talking about the skill positions. We start talking about quarterbacks and wide receivers and cornerbacks and stuff like that. Games are won and lost in the trenches. And that is what Michigan State has done. They are tough up front on both sides of the ball. They beat a scrappy Oregon team, a team that just kind of wouldn't go away. They managed to beat Oregon. And Connor Cook, Michigan State, is a big, strong quarterback. I don't know how he'll be at the next level, but he has the skills to be very, very, at least have a chance to be good at that next level. I like Connor Cook and what he does. Another winner, is BYU. You know, BYU has lost their starting quarterback, and now backup Tyler Mangum has led the Cougars to wins at Nebraska and Saturday again against number 20 Boise State, ending Boise State's chance, you know, to kind of sneak into a playoff if they were to run the table. BYU, I want you to think about this team. BYU has UCLA this week. They go to Michigan, and they have a home game against Missouri still on their schedule. Could BYU possibly play their way into some kind of contention? I realize a lot of teams would have to fall, a lot of things, you know, they would have to take care of a lot of business on their own side, but BYU being an independent, I don't know, could they play their way in there? They're playing, it seems like they're getting a little bit better. Their head coach, Bronco Mendenhall, tough coach, gets a lot out of his kids, tough kids. Did you see the BYU crotch punch to the Boise State kid? Come on, BYU. Last year, you have the bench-clearing brawl, and now this year, we've got the crotch. Come on. Enough of these church schools. Can I just give you a little bit of background? Growing up, I played in like a lot of different, you know, city league basketball or you know, recreation basketball leagues, and I played when I was probably, I don't know, in my early youth. I played in some church league basketball games. Can I just tell you, the filthiest leagues by far, the church league games. Well, not even close. Not even close. You get out on the floor with like, you know, some guys from the city, and there are, you know, there's some unwritten rules. There's certain ways you play. You get in there with like the deacon and like the associate pastor. They're the filthiest players that are ever going to play against you. BYU, come on. You're better than that. Another winner I want to talk about. Again, sort of. Notre Dame. The Fighting Irish pulled out an improbable win under backup quarterback Deshaun Kizer. Kizer threw a 40-yard touchdown pass with 12 seconds left to beat Virginia 34-27. Now for the bad news for the Fighting Irish. First off, Virginia's awful. Why you were even in a game with them, I have no idea. Secondly, the Irish just keep losing players. Let's talk about some of the players that the Fighting Irish have lost. They just lost. We just found out they lost tight end Durham Smythe, who was their starting tight end, big target down the field, nice player. They lost this last week in the game to Virginia. Their starting quarterback, Malik Zaire, who was kind of coming along, making some strides, looked like he might be pretty solid. They've already lost their running back, Torian Folston, and they lost defensive tackle Jerron Jones. Fighting Irish, you literally are starting to talk about Notre Dame because they are running out of people. And here's the thing to keep in mind with Notre Dame. That schedule, we talked about this in the college football preview a couple weeks ago. They have Georgia Tech this week. I believe they go to Clemson. They still have Southern Cal. They have some really, really tough games when you look at the people they are losing. And they're not perimeter players. They're not guys that are kind of on the edge. Well, yeah, it'd be nice to have our nickel back. No. Starting running back, starting defensive tackle, starting quarterback, starting tight end. They're starting to get low on people. And I don't care how good you are, and I told you I really like Notre Dame coming into the season, you're going to run out of depth pretty soon because you're just losing too many people. Did you watch? Have you watched the Showtime series yet? It started last Wednesday night. I believe the next episode is tonight. Have you seen an Eye on Notre Dame or whatever it's called? There's a Showtime series. It's basically Hard Knocks, Notre Dame edition. I watched it. I liked it. It was pretty well done. A couple different storylines. They talk about the injury to Jerron Jones. They talk about how Malik Zaire is trying to make progress and get through. They show a walk-on player come in. So every year, you know how Notre Dame always brings out those stupid, hideous green uniforms, which seems like every time they wear those dumb things, they get beat. But, you know, again, it's like their tradition. They think it's cool. I wouldn't put those things on ever if I were them, but that's just me. They bring in a walk-on player. He's going to model the new uniforms. And when he gets into the team room to model the new uniforms, they kind of spring a surprise on him. If you don't know, we might have to talk about this at some point on the dose. If you don't know what walk-on players go through, we might have to go through and discuss what walk-on players go through. Because I've coached some kids that ended up walking on at college. I know some of those stories of kids that try to walk on, you know, at a four-year school or whatever it is. We might have to talk about some of those things in the future. You might want to check that out. It is on Showtime. And like I said, I believe that the next episode comes out tonight on Wednesday night. They did a pretty nice job. It is pretty interesting the way Brian Kelly does some things, Pretty good TV there. You might want to check that out. Let's shift over in college football to the losers in college football. And we have some losers. And I just had propped them up last week. I just had given them credit. But I have to throw some shade at the Southeastern Conference. The SEC did not have a good week in college football, folks. First off, and I realize Kentucky hadn't beat South Carolina coach Steve Spurrier in 17 straight games. Now Kentucky has beaten Spurrier in back-to-back seasons. I know. It's SEC on SEC crime. But still, you want Steve Spurrier to be good. You want Steve Spurrier to be competitive. You know, sports are more fun when certain teams are good. They just are. Baseball's a little more fun when the Yankees are competitive. It's a little more fun. Football is a little more fun when the Raiders are competitive. I know I'm going back to like the 70s to get to those days, but it's more fun when Notre Dame is at least in the conversation. It's more fun when Steve Spurrier has a competitive team. It's more fun Because then we get some of, you know, his quotes and some of the things he says, and to see Spurrier go down again to Kentucky, Come on now. Oklahoma was down 17-0 to one of my surprise teams, the Tennessee Volunteers, in the second quarter, and they came back and beat Tennessee 31-24 in double overtime. Nice job, Volunteers. You could have totally shut Bob Stoops up for a year, but no, you go out and in the second half gain something like 73 total yards. Really? Against a Big 12 school? You couldn't put together more than that? Thanks, Tennessee. Good looking out, Tennessee. You could have shut him up for a while. Auburn had to come from down 7 to tie it up with 39 seconds left to get by, wait for it, Jacksonville State. Not Jacksonville University. Not the one down in Jacksonville, Florida, where you know they, well, every few years maybe they'll get some athletes. No. Jacksonville State in Jacksonville, Alabama. FCS, Division I AA. Auburn had to score with 39 seconds left to tie it and get into overtime. And then on Saturday night, Florida managed to beat East Carolina 31-24. But that wasn't exactly the story. The Gators struggled all night. They allowed 333 yards to East Carolina. They committed 12 penalties for 105 yards, and they turned it over 2 times. That wasn't the story either, though. In the fourth quarter, Gators running back, you might remember NFL great Fred Taylor. This is Fred Taylor's son, Kelvin Taylor. He scores a 7-yard touchdown, and then he makes the brilliant throat slash motion, which of course we know is an unsportsmanlike penalty, 15 yards in a tight game, in a close game that you really can't afford to be doing this. And that's when the real fun began down in the swamp, because new Florida head coach Jim McElwain lost his mind on Kelvin Taylor. I happen to be watching this I'm telling you, it was entertaining. McElwain goes on a profanity-laced tirade, screaming in the face of this kid for about 2 solid minutes. And I mean, he went crazy. Here's the thing. As a former coach, I've told you in the past, I coached a little bit high school basketball. I get it. I understand. And you have to stomp on it right away. He made a selfish play. He let his emotions get the best of him. You have to discipline him. You can't let it go. You can't just say, well, you know, he kind of got fired up. I get it. No, I've got to stomp on it, because you have to let kids know it's not tolerated, especially in McElwain's first year. I completely understand it. You have to jump on him. I give McElwain some credit for jumping on him and not letting it go. You had been penalized. It seems like Florida is the most penalized team every year in the SEC. Dumb mental mistakes. Those are not the mistakes of a winning program. Winning programs don't make mistakes like that. Here's the problem. McElwain gets in his face, screams like an absolute maniac in front of God and everyone else about not letting his emotions getting the best of him, because that might cause you to do something stupid. So what does McElwain do but let his emotions get the best of him and cause him to look like an idiot in front of everyone? Well done, McElwain. Nice job. I've got news for you. This isn't Colorado State. They will run you out of town if you don't start putting some wins together really, really quick. You don't get credit for beating the East Carolinas. I know up at Colorado State, you got credit for like beating Boston College 1 year. Like that was an accomplishment. But at Florida, they're going to run you out of town if you act like a fool and then you don't back it up. They'll be fine with it as long as he backs it up. They'll support him as long as he backs it up. But you can't yell at a kid like an idiot for not controlling his emotions and lose your emotions in the process. Do you realize how stupid that sounds? You could have easily brought him over and said, hey, that will never happen again. You are third string. And if it happens again, you're out of this program. It would have been so easy. Instead, he just makes himself look like an idiot. Not a great night in Gainesville. At least they got the win. So as bad as all of this is for the SEC, it's not as bad as our next one. It's not as bad as this one. Because you see, Arkansas head coach Brett Bielema, he's done a decent job of turning around the Razorbacks. He's kind of turned them into this tough, hard-nosed kind of team, and he had so much confidence in the Razorbacks program that he actually kind of called out Ohio State last week. During the SEC weekly teleconference that, you know, all the coaches do, Bielema, who was in the Big Ten at one time, he was the coach at Wisconsin at one time, he pointed out that Ohio State has just one ranked opponent remaining on its schedule, while Arkansas still has eight teams on their schedule. I get it. I agree with him. I have no problem with the thought that he's saying, I don't think I'm going to say on the national teleconference. I'm not going to call out Ohio State, hey, you only play one more ranked team. We play eight. And then just, you know, like a day later, Arkansas loses to Toledo 16-12. Not Ohio State, not even Ohio University. Arkansas loses to Toledo. And the Razorbacks put up 515 yards, but scored just 12 points. Tough week for the SEC. I would think they will bounce back a little bit, but tough week for the SEC. They are our loser this week. I want to give you a couple college football games to watch this week. And maybe some of these are going to be, you know, big time on the radar. Some of them are not. One I want to talk about, I think this is going to be a blowout. I probably shouldn't even talk about this game. But I'm going to bring this one up. Air Force goes to number four Michigan State. We just talked about Michigan State and what they have up front. Air Force cannot compete with that up front. They can't. They don't have the people. And if you don't know Air Force's story, they can only recruit certain kids that are a certain size. They can't get the big kids. It always looks like when Air Force is playing, it always looks like a JV going against the varsity. But Air Force does run that weird wingback, funky triple option thing. And Michigan State could be on a little bit of a hangover after beating Oregon in a very, very competitive game. It's probably going to be a blowout. Keep an eye on that game. Keep an eye on that game. Air Force has a little bit of offense this year. I don't know if their defense can hold up. They do have a little bit of offense this year. Number 18, Auburn, goes to number 13, LSU. Remember, Auburn blew LSU out last year, like 41-7 or something. And Auburn is struggling a little bit. They have had a hard time getting the offense going. Their quarterback, Jeremy Johnson, they're not quite sure how they want to use him. Last year, he was able to come in and be kind of that change of pace runner. This year, if you run him too much, he might get hurt. So they've had to kind of make him be that passer instead. Auburn really, really struggled to get things going. And of course, you have LSU, skill everywhere, tons of talent. They just don't have a consistent quarterback. Auburn LSU should be a really entertaining game. One to keep an eye on. Number 14, Georgia Tech, goes to number 8, Notre Dame. Can the backup freshman quarterback not put that defense in terrible positions? And we know Georgia Tech's quarterback, Justin Thomas, he runs that little triple option that Georgia Tech has. He runs it pretty well. If Notre Dame gets themselves in a hole early, or that rookie quarterback, that freshman quarterback comes out and gets them in some kind of trouble, Georgia Tech's going to be tough, because they're going to run, and then they're going to run, and then they're going to run, and then when you're done with that, they're going to run some more. Georgia Tech, Notre Dame should be a very, very fun game to watch. I think Notre Dame, their defense should be good enough to get that one. Keep an eye on that one. Number 15, Ole Miss, at number 2, Alabama. Do you realize, And you might not have paid attention, because let's be honest, Ole Miss hasn't played anybody. But Ole Miss is averaging 74.5 points per game right now. Meanwhile, Alabama is allowing 13.5 points per game right now. So something's going to have to give in that one. And what's probably going to happen, Ole Miss will probably keep it close early and then throw a few pick sixes late. And then get blown out. That's just Ole Miss. That's kind of who they are. Should be an interesting game. Going to be fun to see if Ole Miss can keep up that offensive streak that they've had going. They are putting up points in bunches. Last game I want to talk about is number 19. We just talked about it. Number 19, BYU, at number 10, UCLA. BYU, I believe, is like a 17-point underdog in this game. UCLA should win this, but I'm going to be honest. UCLA hasn't played anyone yet, and they sure haven't played anybody as battle-tested as Brigham Young is right now. They played Virginia, and they played UNLV. Both those teams are bad. If BYU were to keep this game close early, if they can keep it close, we're going to see if that freshman quarterback for UCLA, Josh Rosen, the Chosen, what's he going to do when the pressure's on? What's he going to do when it's all on him and he has to make a play? He's been able to get over on some bad teams and had big leads and no pressure and not really any have to make any clutch plays, or he can just kind of go out and let the game come to him. What happens if he has to make some clutch plays? I want to see what UCLA does this week. I got to tell you, 17 points. I don't know if I'm going to take BYU to win, but I might take those points. It's a lot of points. As we do every single week, we have got to get to our Daily Dose top five. We talked a little bit earlier about the NFL and about how we overreact in week one to the NFL. I'm going to give you five examples of when we have overreacted in week one, because this isn't new. Sometimes we get, you know, a mindset of, well, it's just because of social media. And it's because we have so much TV coverage and we have so many, just so many things coming at us. I mean, you've got, you know, all these, you know, Screamin' A. Smith and all these, you know, talk shows, and you've got podcasts, you've got people talking about this. That's the only reason that it's as, it seems like it's as big as it. No, we overreact to the NFL week one every single year. This isn't anything new. We've been doing this for a long time. People overreact when they first, it's funny. Because when you watch the preseason, you look at those four games and you go, those games don't matter. Those games are completely irrelevant and meaningless. And they're tough to read. We've talked about that. They're hard to figure out what they mean. But then we look at the first four quarters of the regular season and we think we can take everything. Well, oh yeah, I totally understand what's going on here. No, we don't. No, we don't. Let's look at the top five times we have overreacted to week one. Number five. In 2012, there was this rookie quarterback, and he led his team to a big opening day win. This kid came in, had a lot of hype around him, came in and went 19 for 26 for 320 yards, two touchdowns, also had nine carries for 42 yards, and people right away were saying, he is the next great quarterback. It's coming. It's coming. This is our next great quarterback. Look at the skills he possesses. Look at the abilities that he has. Look at the way he throws, the way he carries, the way he leads his team. This is the next great quarterback coming. The Redskins won the game 40. The Saints had 32. And now Robert Griffin III is struggling to even get off the bench. He has been demoted to third string. Looks like his days in Washington are probably over. RG3 was the biggest thing coming out in 2012. Everybody was hyped on him. Look at what he did. He lit up the Saints. Well, yeah, but the Saints' defense is horrible. And he was just at the right place, right time. Mike Shanahan had coached them up pretty well. Did it mean anything? Not necessarily. Early success doesn't always guarantee future success. We see this right here. Let me give you another example. Number four on our list. In 1993, the Dallas Cowboys got blown out in week one by the Washington Redskins, 35-16. In that game, Redskins quarterback Mark Rippon threw three touchdowns against the vaunted Cowboys defense. And then the following week, the Cowboys lost again in week two to the Buffalo Bills. And then the Cowboys saw that same Buffalo Bills team in Super Bowl 27 and pounded them 30-13. Did week one matter? Not really. Did week two matter? Nope. The good teams find a way. The good teams fix some things and understand that who we are in September isn't who we are in December, in January, maybe even in February if you're lucky enough. Dallas Cowboys shook that off and moved forward. Number three on our list, in 2007, the New York Giants got beat 45-35 by Tony Romo and the Cowboys. Tony Romo had 345 yards and four touchdowns in the opening week. And then in week two, again, the Giants lose to the Packers and Brett Favre, and Brett Favre lit them up 35-13. Packers light up the Giants, but the Giants went on to beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 42. Doesn't always mean anything. That week one thing, sometimes we overreact a little bit. Number two on our list, you might remember this one. In 2003, the New England Patriots were crushed opening week against the Buffalo Bills 31-0. And if you don't remember this one, you know, the Patriots had Drew Bledsoe. He had that injury where he had, I think it was a spleen or something, got knocked out. The Patriots bring in Tom Brady. I know this is all, this is like a history lesson for Patriots fan, because the only quarterback you've ever known of is Tom Brady. I know. Before Tom Brady, there was a guy named Drew Bledsoe. He was a big, strong quarterback who wasn't always very good. He gets hurt. They bring in Tom Brady, whatever, you know, with Tom Brady. Bledsoe ends up going to Buffalo. And he comes back to face his old team. They blow out the Patriots 31-0. And I mean, Bledsoe gets kind of a little bit of revenge against a team that decided he wasn't good enough. They could go with the young kid, Tom Brady. Didn't matter to the Patriots, though. The Patriots ended up, after that game, losing 31-0. Patriots went 14-1 the remainder of the season and won Super Bowl 38. It doesn't always matter what you do in week one. Week one's pretty meaningless. And I'm going to give you one last example. Our number one on our Daily Dose top five. Times that we have overreacted to NFL week one. In 1983, this quarterback started his very first game ever. And he played against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I'm going to be honest, he was horrible. He went 1-for-8 for 14 yards and an interception, and he ended up getting benched. The Steelers won the game behind quarterback Cliff Stout and running back Franco Harris. And when that happened, people in Denver started to freak out and think they might have a bust. But you know, John Elway turned out to be a pretty good quarterback in the long run. There is our Daily Dose top five, the top five times we have overreacted to the NFL week one. Hey, next week on the show, we'll be taking a look at which teams are going to improve from that week one. Some of them are going to step up. Some of them are going to take a step back. We'll take a look at the NFL and see what goes on in week two. Got some college football stuff we want to get to next week. Take a look at some of the teams, who's moving around. We got some, you know, these out of conference games. Take a look at, you know, some good games that are coming up. Maybe some teams that are making some noise. Maybe take a look at some teams that we didn't expect to be as good as they are right yet. And we will be looking at Major League Baseball. Pennant races are getting closer. Divisional races, wild card races, a lot of stuff to look at in Major League Baseball. And as usual, we will always have our Daily Dose top five. You never want to miss it. You never know which way it's going to go. Might go a number of different ways, but you want to check out the Daily Dose top five. If you get a chance, head on over to iTunes, give us that 5-star rating and review. We would appreciate that so much. As usual, have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this without you. I would like to thank you all so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. If you get a chance, tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell a family member, somebody, have them check out the Daily Dose. You know, the bigger it gets, the better it gets. Thank you all so much for listening. I hope you all have a great week. I will see you all next week, everybody.